from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll get a preview of a new version of Babes in Toyland being produced at Footlight.
I'll find out about a jazzy nutcracker at the University of Indianapolis.
And I'll meet some of the artists who are a part of this year's Stutz Holiday Open House. Plus, we'll have the arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. A century ago, a fizzy Victor Herbert operetta called Babes in Toyland charmed audiences for the Christmas holiday. In the 1960s, the Disney machine put out a popular film version of the story, starring Annette Funicello. And in the 1980s, it was Drew Barrymore in a TV take on the story. And now, Indianapolis writers Bob Harbin and Claire Wilcher are taking their turn telling this timeless tale. And you can see the results at Footlight Musicals from this weekend through December 13th. Sharon Gamble invited Claire and Bob to tell us about their creative process.
So before we talk about Babes in Toyland, Claire, I want to hear the short version of your road trip.
Well,
there is none.
There is a short version. I recently took a four-month RV trip around the country to every comedy sports city. All 23.
And you had a little trepidation about that when you came in to talk with us about
that. I did. But now I have the tattoo to prove that I was there, and I've got an RV.
I thought that
tattoo.
Was new.
Yeah.
Wow. So
14,000 miles.
And you survived
with
your humor intact?
Exactly, yes. And Large Marge, my RV, is still intact and in the world.
Oh, waiting for the next adventure?
I hope so.
Huh. Should I ask what the next adventure will be?
Well, the next adventure is to find a place to put her for the winter, because I can't exactly drive her anywhere unless it's somewhere warm. So she's going to take a little break, as am I, and hoping to hit the two European comedy sports cities in the spring.
Wow.
Yeah, there's one in Berlin and one in Manchester, UK.
Fantastic.
So hopefully that will happen.
Tell me what about the trip most surprised you that you weren't anticipating.
I never knew what a process it would be. And by that, I mean from simple things like parking to figuring out directions, from getting gas, taking, 25 minutes as opposed to 10 when you're in a small car.
Mm-hmm.
And the mileage, honestly, I thought I would go about 11,000 miles and I ended up going 14.
Wow.
There was just a lot of back and forth and some side road travels. So it was really eye-opening to experience the RV culture.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. It was leisurely. And at the same time, kind of stressful.
You're happy to be home.
Very happy, yes.
And you're happy to be working with Bob Harbin?
Always, always.
That's because I was born in a trailer. I'm trailer trash from way back. So this process stuff, I don't get it. It's fine.
Just old hat to you.
Oh, the incinerator out in the yard, burn that trash. It just works. But I'm proud of you.
None of this will be part of Babes in Toyland, I should probably tell our listeners.
No, we had to save the good stuff for Babes.
There you go.
We are so lucky. We discovered that, in 1903, just briefly, The Wizard of Oz actually debuted on Broadway.
Oh.
And it was an instant hit. So as, Hollywood still, and New York, something's a hit. Let's do some more. We got to have, So they went out to make another hit, and they came up with this show that was actually produced in, Wizard was in January. By September, Babes in Toyland debuted on Broadway.
That was a good year for Broadway.
And it too, was a big hit.
Mm-hmm.
Victor Herbert, what was the writer of the music? Little did we know that we would share billing.
We do.
With Victor Herbert.
I feel good.
And
he was
pretty experienced by then. He was well into his career.
He was well known. The two of the songs have survived, Toyland and probably the March of the Wooden Soldiers,
mm-hmm.
we all would recognize. However, the book Oh, I wasn't quite as lucky. It's become public domain, which left us the option of writing something ourselves. So,
slow down a little bit.
Yeah.
So, it was just too dated?
You know, well, the man's dead, so it was just awful.
It was bad.
How so? See, well, you're speaking as theater artists.
Yes. Plot-wise, there wasn't much going on. There were
I was
lots
surprised
of...
that the toy maker was making dolls with evil spirits. And trying, you know, trying to be evil to the children, and
ooh.
And I mean, it just I'm not, and it was 3.5 hours long,
yes.
Four acts. It, you know, God bless him. By our standards, it was today. It was just a mess.
It wasn't. It wasn't snappy.
No.
And I grew up watching the '60s version with Annette Funicello,
the Disney movie.
Yes,
yeah.
and Ray Bolger,
and Tommy Sands.
And I loved that version. So when Bob and I started talking about this, and I visited the old script, it is like night and day.
Yeah. What's good is that. We were able to decide this early on, so we did a lot of writing before she went around the world in 80 days, and I was directing...
Jesus Christ Superstar.
Thank you, Jesus Christ Superstar. And we got a lot of it written. We finished it up on the computer with each other,
mm-hmm.
And it's fun. It's cute. It's adorable. I won't go any farther than that. You'll have to come see for yourself.
Based on Mother Goose stories, right?
Yes, nursery rhymes.
Nursery rhymes.
The characters are all characters from nursery rhymes, with the exception of the bad guy, Barnaby. He doesn't, as we point out in the script, he doesn't have his own rhyme. So, like, where'd you come from?
Oh.
But he's our bad guy, and he's out to marry the young Mary quite contrary. And,
or her fortune.
Exactly.
Ah,
and her
gold digger.
Her fave boyfriend, Tom the Piper's son. I guess theft wasn't much of a crime back
nope.
then, was
it? He stole a pig in a way he ran.
He got a whole herd of them
fine.
By now.
Yeah.
It's harmless. It's a nursery rhyme.
Exactly right. So they're all there, and we did, and I'm really happy about this. We tried to stay very faithful to the music. So they're 15, 16 songs in the show. And I think without it, they're all melodies that came from the original.
That's true.
So we didn't bother, you know, tread on that at all.
Did they stay in the same order? Did you make your book conform to the order? No, you mixed it up.
We started from word one. I mean, we really created a story from the ground up, keeping obviously elements of the story from the old 1903 version and from the Disney movie. But we did create our own story that I think... What is really great about it is it's appealing to both children and adults. It's written smartly. It's written in a very kind of wink, wink, nudge, nudge way.
Sure.
We definitely are playing toward something for children because it is that holiday magic and Toyland and all that. But I think a lot of the characters also have a lot of just very high comedy quality to them,
sure.
And there's lots of. Just it's
there's
just
something
fun.
Years in there when
yeah.
you come, when you look for them. I think that we wanted to write something because there's wonderful holiday traditions here in town,
mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of shows in town that are holiday shows with children, not necessarily for children.
Mm-hmm.
So we tried to turn this around and make a holiday show for children. That adults are going to come and really enjoy as well.
So a couple questions about source material. So you have young people, you have children in the cast.
6 to 60.
Do kids know the Mother Goose story still? Are parents still passing them
on? You don't think so? Oh, I think
they
do.
I mean, in general, I would say yes. It's been interesting to see... Which ones they know, which ones they don't know. A couple of them are a little more obscure than others.
Mm-hmm. For example?
Well, you know, the Three Men in a Tub. They.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody had, you know, had anything about... However, then all of a sudden, Willy Winky, who's played by Zach Clare, I asked him once, I said, you know, so do you know who this guy is? Yes, he runs up and down town in his nightgown.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, that there is a familiarity with most of it. And the name Mother Goose, I think, resonates.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mm-hmm. And we have a goose. We have Gandhi.
A real goose.
Kinda.
No, it's not a real goose.
Kinda.
Well, you know how when people do productions of Annie, they have a real dog. We could have gotten a real goose, but it was a little unwieldy. They're not trainable.
They poo everywhere.
I don't remember on your personnel seeing a goose handler.
It does such a thing for the dancers. They just didn't like it. Mm.
But the voice of Mother Goose is somebody very familiar, actually very familiar to people who are aficionados of WFYI.
And it's like, and Gandhi sounds so much like that sound effect that just resonates.
Yeah.
Mickey Mathiadakis is playing Mother Goose, and she's twisting every nuance possible.
It's Mother Goose with an attitude.
Absolutely.
Well, then that's
absolutely.
Fun.
Yeah.
So how do you? So the original book, the film, and your book are all kind of. You're rappelling from you're using the Mother Goose tales as a starting point. How do you create a through line story, or how did you figure out what your story was there?
Well, I think taking the elements of the original Babes in Toyland story, we kind of created a story around that framework with the toy maker. The entire second act takes place in Toyland.
Mm-hmm.
And we meet the friendly old toy maker, who is kind of this father figure in the show that is lacking throughout the whole first act. And the through line is kind of, I don't want to give away too much, but the through line is kind of based on how we all need to feel special and mm-hmm. how everyone is very special in their own way and can contribute to life in a very simple and friendly sort of way. And I don't know. Well, Bob, do you want to add to that?
No, I think that too, we grow up sometimes being given information that we glorify, and everything becomes so special and almost perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And then we discover when we get a little older, it's not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some basic, wonderful things that make up, you know, these ideals that we make them then perfect to whatever we need at the moment. So you go to Toyland and it's a mess. But there's enough good stuff going on there that they all discover why Toyland exists.
What I think is really neat about the story that we've created is that it's not saccharine.
Uh-uh.
It's really not. And that's kind of what we wanted to avoid.
No, it sounds like it has a don't tell the kids this, but a fair amount of substance.
We hope so. Yeah, I think that was the point, because
Bo Peep is a repeater sheep loser. You know, we.
Yeah, she's not perfect.
She's lost her sheep, and it's like, oh, really, again? Oh, well, that's too bad, Bo. You know, let's go out and see if we can find your sheep. Come on.
Yeah,
get your act together.
So it's a lot of stuff like that where, you know, and Tom, although he's our hero, he's a doofus.
Yeah.
He keeps trying to be something that he's not. And then you realize that, you know what? You're enough. You're okay
just the way you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hmm.
There are a couple things I should probably, you know, put out there. Footlight Musicals is where this is all going to take place. And I should mention that opening night is going to be pretty special. Santa will be there. Santa Claus is going to come to opening night. And it's also military night. So any of you out there that are part of the military, past or present, if you come in your uniform or have your ID, your tickets are only $5, you know, for up to four people. We're also participating with Toys for Tots this year. So bring unopened.
Yeah, we don't want it to be played with.
But unwrapped.
Correct, unwrapped.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So an unwrapped. Oh, that's right, because you wrap it for.
Yes.
Yeah, I wrote this thing. So you bring.
You've been hanging out with that goose too much, haven't you?
Unopened a present, and we'll be collecting those for the Toys for Tots situation program.
Yeah.
Sunday, the 22nd, we will have an interpreter. For deaf folk, we will have a special section set aside. So if you're listening to this, tell someone who isn't and let them know that we have a section for the deaf community.
Mm-hmm.
On that Sunday. It's Footlights 60th anniversary year. So
wow,
we are pretty darn lucky to be able to be a part of it.
Sharon Gamble with Bob Harbin and Claire Wilcher. Babes in Toyland, featuring a new book they wrote, opens this weekend at Footlight Musicals. Bob directs, and it's a story for the whole family. Learn more and get your tickets at footlight.org. Again, footlite.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
To mark the 100th anniversary of the birth of legendary jazz arranger Billy Strayhorn, top music students at the University of Indianapolis will join forces with faculty and local professionals to present the celebrated Ellington Strayhorn Nutcracker in its entirety this holiday season. Travis DiNicola invited University of Indianapolis Jazz Studies Director Freddie Mendoza into our studio to find out more.
Freddie, great to have you back in our studio. Welcome.
Thank you, Travis. It's always an honor to be here.
Thank you. And looking forward to the upcoming concert you've got going on at University of Indianapolis. You know, when we last talked, you had just been here for a little while. It was about a year ago, I think, as the director of the Jazz Studies program. And you've been doing some great stuff down there. And this upcoming concert is a really cool way to celebrate the holidays. The Ellington Strayhorn Nutcracker. I want to hear all about this because, you know, we talk a lot about all the different nutcrackers in town, and, you know, pretty much during the holidays, about every ballet company in town has nutcracker, theaters have nutcrackers, but it's not often you get a group of jazz musicians doing a nutcracker. So tell me about this.
Well, you're absolutely right about that. You know, about in the 1960s, you know, Ellington started in the 1920s. And by the 1960s, he had written quite a lot of literature for the jazz ensemble mm-hmm. and his orchestra. And so he started to get into crossover music, where he would take orchestral works and reimagine them for his jazz ensemble. And he did that with the Peer Gynt Suite, and mm-hmm. he wrote a wonderful multi-movement work called The Sacred Concerts,
okay.
And then he also wrote a Far East Suite, and he wrote he and Billy Strayhorn collaborated to pull the 9 most memorable movements from the Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker and rearrange them for his orchestra, and release the Nutcracker Suite.
I've heard of some of the other ones, but I had not heard of the Nutcracker one.
Is
this one, I mean, is it not performed frequently? Is it a little bit more rare? Or?
Well, you know, the deal was is that it has not been performed a whole lot mm-hmm. compared to other works of Ellington that get a lot of play. And part of the reason for that was they never released the music, the sheet music for it. They never published it. Now, a number of years ago, a very famous transcriber of Ellington's music, David Berger, wrote a transcription of the piece. It was all handwritten. In places might be a little challenging to read because, you know, he did it by hand. But somehow those parts got out.
Was there a reason why Ellington Strayhorn didn't release it?
I don't think there was really a reason. You know, they recorded the album. I think that was the only performance they really gave of it.
Yeah.
And they never really pushed it. Obviously, it's a Christmas thing. So you got to kind of plan that, okay, we're going to do this at Christmas. It doesn't make sense to do it at another time.
Sure.
And so I got this, you know, they just didn't do it. They wrote it in 1960. And so those parts kind of passed around underground a little bit. And I had the good fortune of meeting Larry Strayhorn, who is Billy Strayhorn's nephew, who will be here for this event.
Yeah, that's very cool.
And several other events that he'll be a part of that weekend, the preceding weekend. But, you know, I had a long talk with him about it, and he said, yeah, well, you know, Mr. David Berger really never had the permission, and this was his perception, never really had the permission or was given the permission to do this, so he couldn't publish it. I mean, I'm sure David Berger would have loved to publish this work, but he couldn't publish it. And so it kind of went underground, and, you know, you kind of had to be in the know to get those parts. And when I took my job at Texas State University in 2002, the first thing I did was go through their library, which is a pretty big jazz library, and I came across these scores and parts, and I thought, oh, well, we have to do this. I mean, this is I've never heard it before really in my life other than the recording. And I love the recording, so it doesn't get done very often, but it was recently published by a major music company, I want to say Alfred Music, and it was retranscribed by Jeff Hest. And, you know, he really took painstaking care to write out all of the solos from the work, which are just amazing, virtuosic, wonderful solos. They sound like their own musical compositions. It has a very, very challenging clarinet book in the tenor and the lead alto and even, I think, the second tenor. So you've got to have a pretty strong band to pull this off because the clarinet parts are virtuosic. And then they published it. And my predecessor, Harry Miedema, bought it. And, of course, I bought it as soon as it came out. And so we have a copy of it in our library. And, you know, I was excited to win a grant to be able to put this on through the University of Indianapolis.
Oh, nice. Now, what was the grant?
Well, they call it an inquiry grant. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's a grant that really is about promoting maybe some certain type of pedagogy, and it requires community involvement and student involvement, and you know, so there have to be several sort of qualifications you meet, but this particular performance meets all those qualifications.
Because you're going to have students as well as faculty as well as outside musicians play, right?
Absolutely. It's a collaboration between UND students, you know, the best of our best, and UND alumni and UND faculty and local area professionals that are at the highest level. Many of the names that you might know, probably one of the big ones, Nick Tucker.
Sure.
He's an alumnus. Sean Imboden.
Okay.
Who is, you know, really making his name in the city. If he hasn't already made his name, I'm new. But he's wonderful. And you know, there's a middle school band director that's a fantastic clarinetist and alto tenor saxophonist Amanda Gardier, and you know, there's just a lot of really big time local area professionals that are joining us with this.
So what's really cool is as you mentioned, Billy Strayhorn's nephew is going to be here, and my understanding is he's going to be here both narrating the concert and then also here for a movie that's a documentary about his brother or his uncle that's going to be shown a few days earlier, right?
Absolutely. So Friday night, December the
4th,
he will be on the campus of University of Indianapolis, and they're going to be in the Schwitzer Center in UND Hall A. And at 6:15, they're going to air the, I think, Grammy Award-winning PBS documentary, Lush Life. It's Billy Strayhorn. Lush Life, and it's about Billy Strayhorn's life because a lot of people, when you know they think of Duke Ellington, they don't know who Billy Strayhorn is. But Billy Strayhorn collaborated with him for around 30 years, and you know, scholars to this day have trouble deciding when Ellington's hand stops and Billy's hand begins. They were so similar, and they had the same sensibilities about composing and arranging music for this ensemble. It's just that Billy was kind of the man behind the scenes too. So Ellington a lot of times would come up with these things. He might write, jot down some things conceptually, and he'd send them to Billy, and Billy would flush them out. And that's definitely the case with this piece of music. And it also happens that this is the centennial celebration of the birth of Billy Strayhorn. And so there are events celebrating his life and music all throughout the United States, and they're currently adding us to their foundation website as a event that is part of their celebration. So, you know, the timing couldn't be
more perfect. Yeah, absolutely. So his nephew Larry will be there on December 4th, that Friday, for the Lush Life documentary, but then he's also going to be at the performance on December 7th, right?
He is. I've done this before. What we like to do is Larry will come up and he will start the concert off by sharing some of his anecdotal experiences with his uncle, and specifically in the writing of this piece. And he gives us a little bit more background that you're probably really not going to see if you don't go see the documentary or if you don't read about.
Now, is Larry a musician as well?
No, he's not really a musician. You know, he's a very accomplished man, and he tends to his uncle's estate, and he's and he has a great vision for, you know, really spreading the word about Billy Strayhorn.
Yeah.
And obviously he's very passionate about it too. Yeah. And he's a joy to talk with, because you really get the inside scoop on Ellington and Strayhorn and what's going on, what went down. And you know, they had a wonderful collaboration and produced some of the most memorable music we've ever heard.
Very cool. You know, I mean, so many people make the Nutcracker in different ways, part of their holiday tradition. It's really nice to have a new way to enjoy the Nutcracker with a live jazz concert.
You know, I'd be willing to bet that a lot of people that come see this that hadn't seen it before will go out and buy that recording and add it to their collection of Christmas albums they like to listen to during the Christmas season, because it's a pleasure to work with it. I've conducted it 15 times. This will be my 15th time. And every year I conduct it, I learn something new about it I didn't know before.
I mean, obviously, it's a jazz version of the Nutcracker. But what does that mean with the Nutcracker? I mean, this is a piece of music that so many of us know and know so well and know through the normal orchestral playings of it. But is it faster? Is it hipper? Is it just the instruments are different? I mean, what should people be looking for?
Well, you know, I don't want to go down as the guy that said that jazz is hipper than classical music. You know, that's a tough that's a tough sell. But in my world, it's pretty hip. And, you know, he didn't just take the melodies and jazz them up. He reimagined them. So, you know, the audience listener might be familiar with, you know, the ba-ba-ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba-ba-ba-ba-da, you know, that very famous opening. Yeah. And his is bop ba ba do beep bop boop beep bop boo da dwee dot, you know. And so he really takes it, and a couple of them are, I don't want to say they're in disguise, because they're not, but, you know, it takes a second, and then you go, oh, yeah, that's that one, right, you know. So there, it wasn't really just, you know, like a high school jazz up of that theme.
Okay.
It's totally reworked, and but with enough in there for sure for the audience to understand what's going on. And like, there'll be several trombone solos and clarinet solos and trumpet solos and a lot of plunger work. You know, a lot of the movements, he'll break out two trumpets and two trombones and form a little quartet that's playing with the ensemble, except they're all doing this coordinated plunger work. So, you know, his band members were famous for pioneering, in a lot of cases, the use of the plunger. And, you know, we do it the old school way with the Pixie Mute and the Bell. And,
awesome.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And, you know, I'm really excited to do this work again and to bring it to Indianapolis. And the vision is, hopefully down the road, you know, it would be nice to add Dance Kaleidoscope or another group to choreograph it.
I was just going to ask you, if do you know, has any dance company performed to this music before?
Yes, this has happened. Yeah, it's rare, because obviously the logistics is a lot. It's, you know, for a lot of groups, it's just enough to play this piece of music, because it's challenging. But, you know, at my previous institution, we had a dance troupe. We had a dance department. And about the fifth or sixth year of doing it, I contacted them and said, hey, you know, this is an opportunity for your students to come up with something for this. And so for the remaining years, it turned into a big thing, a really big thing with the dancer. Our students choreographed it. They danced in it. You know, there were lights, all kinds of stuff. And you know, I wanted to start small and put it out there and then build it every year. The idea is that this becomes a tradition at the University of Indianapolis, and you can come see the Duke Ellington Nutcracker and really see a different version of it that you probably have not seen before.
Awesome. Freddie, starting small, but hoping it becomes something big and a new tradition. Thanks so much for coming into Art of the Matter today.
Well, thank you very much for having us. We appreciate it.
Travis DiNicola with University of Indianapolis Jazz Studies Director Freddie Mendoza. The Ellington Strayhorn Nutcracker will be performed on December 7th at 7:30 at the Randsburg Auditorium on the U of I campus. There will also be a documentary film about Billy Strayhorn that will be screened on December 4th. For more information, visit the University of Indianapolis website at uindy.edu. Again, uindy.edu. Hey, Travis, did you let the turkeys in early?
Someone should let the turkeys out, Sharon.
Hey, turkeys, it's a week too soon. We've got all sorts of things still to tell you about before Thanksgiving week on our calendar that we call What Do We Do?
Speaking of turkeys.
Yes?
Yes, Matt Soce is going to be...
Sorry, Matt.
Oh, Matt. You know we love you. This is awesome. He is going to be emceeing an event that's coming up on December 3rd. It is the Wild and Scenic Film Festival. And if there's anyone who is wild and scenic, it is definitely Matt. It is Thursday, December 3rd from 7:00 to 9:30 at the Athenaeum. And it's the first of its kind film festival. It's all films about individuals and communities that are taking action and becoming part of a solution on issues ranging from energy, food systems, biodiversity, climate change, and all sorts of things like that, and wild land and wild water. And so it's a wild and scenic film festival, and it's promoting and supporting the IFA, which is the Indiana Forest Alliance's Wild Indiana Campaign. And so this should be pretty cool. Doors open at 6, and there'll be lots of raffles and prizes from like Good Earth and REI and all sorts of stuff. So if you go to Brown Paper Tickets and search for the Wild and Scenic Film Festival or Indiana Forest Alliance, you can find out about buying all the different types of tickets that they have here. But I'm sure Matt will have a great time.
We have so many film festivals in Indianapolis. We are so lucky. Hey, don't forget that cellist Ingvar Segev will be with the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra this Saturday night playing the Shostakovich No. 1. Also music by Korngold and Beethoven on the program. And guest conductor Kelly Kuo is directing. Find out more at icomusic.org, icomusic.org.
You know, I thought that a jazz version of the Nutcracker was about the coolest holiday thing I could imagine. And then I found out about this. Asante Children's Theater is presenting a holiday concert and food drive, A Superfly Christmas, featuring a tribute to Curtis Mayfield on December 4th and 5th with skits and dance numbers and songs. And it's part of what they're doing to do an annual holiday food drive to restock the shelves of Gleaner's Food Bank. But yes, it is A Superfly Christmas, Friday the 4th, 7 o'clock at the Schrott Center, and then at Madam Walker on Saturday, December 5th. You can get more information at AsanteChildrensTheater.org. But how cool to have a Superfly.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Hey, so despite our telling the turkeys to go away and come back next week, you probably are making plans for your Thanksgiving week and weekend. And if you're thinking, oh, what am I going to do with all those relatives who are descending on my house? We have some ideas on our calendar. How about getting in the car and heading to Madison, Indiana, on the Ohio River? They're doing their traditional...
Are you supposed to take your relatives with you or leave them at home?
Oh, my goodness. That's an even better idea.
Well, never mind.
Here, guys, here's the remote. Sharon. You watch all the games. Don't forget to feed the cats. Right. I'm going to Madison. Madison, any time of year is beautiful, but especially the nights before Christmas, because they do traditional candle-lit tours and electric light tours as well. And a cookie celebration at the Visitor Center. And those are going on November 27th and 28th, right after Thanksgiving, as well as the following weekend, December 4th and 5th. Hop online and find out more about those.
Very cool. Hey, this weekend, the Great American Antiques Market is going on. It's at the Basile Opera Center up on Pennsylvania Street. And it goes from 10 to 7 on Saturday, 11 to 5 on Sunday. It is a fundraiser for NAMI, which is the National Association of Mental Illness here in Indianapolis. It's a great event that they do each and every year with tons of vendors. You might be able to find a very cool holiday gift there, in fact.
There we go. I like that.
Should be fun.
So maybe you're taking your relatives to see the lighting of the world's tallest Christmas tree next week. But if that's not enough lighting up for you, take them to Broad Ripple on November 28th from 3 to 7 for Broad Ripple Lights Up. You can see a holiday festival and parade.
There's a Kids Wonderland Activity Village. Give the kids something to burn off all that sugar energy on. Live entertainment, Indianapolis's only Twilight Parade, and the lighting of the 21-foot-tall tree and holiday light display at Indianapolis Fire Station number 32, which is at 6330 Guilford Avenue, right in the heart of Broad Ripple.
Nice. Very cool. Mm-hmm. Hey, I know that you talked about it already, Sharon, but something that's so possum, I got to talk about it again. Yes,
did you
I
say
said
awesome or possum?
Possum. Like possum, because it's the cat festival,
oh,
the cat
my
video
gosh.
Festival
I got
this
that
weekend.
Email today, too, with the kids with the cool cat makeup.
It's so fun. And so it continues on, of course, this weekend, Friday at 7, Saturday at 3 and 7 in the Toby. And there's going to be a pop up shop with possum things, like the book Cat is Art Spelled Wrong. And all sorts of calendars and mugs. And oh, yes. And that's going on at the IMA this weekend.
And don't forget special appearances by Lil Bob.
Lil Bob!
The perma kitten.
Oh, he's so cute.
you know, Scott, we did not make Scott Stolen up. So
no,
you heard the interview last
you?
Week.
You
know we're not making this whole cat video festival thing up.
Well, Sharon, you can always learn more about the local arts events at indiearts.org/guide, the Arts Council of Indianapolis' Indie Arts Guide website, or listen to us next weekend on
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
You probably know about the Stutz Artist Open House in the spring, but you may not know that the resident painters, potters, and other practitioners also throw open their doors for the winter holidays. This year's Stutz Holiday Open House is Friday, December 4th, and features more than 50 artists offering works to give as gifts to others or to yourself. Sharon invited Anne Emerson Wishard and sculptor Myra Perrin to tell us about what they've been working on together as co-chairs of the show and why you should visit.
How did you encounter one another in the first place?
Well, I taught at the Indianapolis Art Center for several years, and Anne was one of my students.
Okay. All right.
I'd been taking jewelry classes there for some time, and everyone kept talking about Myra. Myra, Myra, Myra.
Couldn't
it's
escape
like,
her,
who
huh?
is this Myra? So I finally took a class from her and found out what everybody was talking about.
Uh-huh. And Myra, I know that that you've been teaching various places, including the mm-hmm. Art Center, because your name is famous in conjunction with the Art Center. But I understand that you started really young making things. Your dad had a workbench, and you used to hang out at his workbench?
My father had an electronics business, and which back then meant TV repair and various things, uh-huh. and there was solder and soldering irons, and I would sit at a bench, and I would melt solder into little various things, and then the men in my family who made lots of things, and they were always had a tool around. Here, take this tool, see what it does.
That's really wonderful.
It was. It is.
That and do you have brothers?
I have a brother. Mm-hmm. 7 years younger. Uh-huh.
And was he similarly fascinated with the tools?
I think so, yes.
Yeah. So that set you on the path to... Was jewelry your entry point to sculpture?
It was not. I enrolled at the Heron School of Art and Design when I was 44 and did a BFA in furniture design. I love wood and love the sculptural capabilities and just... all the exploration with wood, and made a small metal vessel to go into a piece that I made, and then I got bit by the metal bug.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, wood or metal, it all is sculpture,
mm-hmm.
whether it's large or small and you wear it.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite tool?
Hammers.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
There is something really pleasurable about banging away on something and watching it change shape. That was probably what I liked most about the jewelry mm-hmm. classes was forging the metal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To the point that I signed up for a blacksmithing class.
Whoa.
a little different, but you're still making something beautiful out of what is just a block, just a chunk.
Exactly.
And then you apply a little force to it, and it changes right under your hands.
Yeah.
It's a really amazing thing to watch.
And you do that with your photography, but the process is somewhat different.
Right. I like to call what I do abstract realism.
You're going to define that for us, aren't
you? Yeah, right. It's something I made up.
Okay.
Because I couldn't figure out what else to call it. And I look at the same things that everybody else does, but I see it differently.
How do you think that started?
Drugs. Oh, I got hit on the head as a child.
Your husband is talking back to the radio right now saying, yeah, maybe, yeah, yeah. True.
One of the best compliments I ever got was from one of my grandmothers who just out of the blue said to me one day that I could walk into a room and see more than any other person could.
Wow.
I was floored by that. Because she was not a woman given to many compliments. And from that point forward, I realized that I saw things differently or more clearly, and that it was incumbent upon me to interpret what I saw and to show those interpretations.
To help other people see.
Mm-hmm.
Your house has a Jens Jensen landscape, do I understand that correctly? So,
yeah.
And
most of my photographs are based.
Right, and you're a master gardener as well, which means I'm guessing that those two things together mean that you look at nature somewhat differently than a more casual, someone with a more casual relationship with the garden, with the landscape.
Mm-hmm. But probably. I grew up with a great appreciation for the natural world.
Mm-hmm.
Grew up in Knox County. And we own a farm and 120 some odd acres of woodlands. And the woodlands were our backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm used to and actually enjoy having dirt under my nails.
Myra's looking at her hands.
Myra may have solder or metal shards under hers.
Well, do you wear gloves when you work as a sculptor?
It depends on the tool I'm using. If I'm using a handheld motorized big angle grinder, yes,
yeah.
I will wear gloves, but
sure.
Usually not.
How important is it to be able, how important is the tactile sense to you to be able to feel the grain of wood or the...
Oh, wow.
The weight of metal.
The weight, it's all of that. Tactile, like, you know, I can take a piece of wood, say a piece of mahogany, which I love to carve, and you just start looking at it, and the wood kind of says, well, this is where I want to go. And I, even when I'm carving, I might have a plan, but then the wood will tell me, no, go this way.
Mm-hmm. So the initial sketch and the finished product might be different.
Absolutely. And the same with metal. Using forging, using my hammer, the metal might go in a direction. I think, ooh, I think I like that better than my original plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I experiment, lots of experimentation.
And you're working in materials that allow for the experimentation.
Yes.
To a certain point.
Yeah. The nice thing about silver, if you make something and it's not working out, you recycle. You melt it down, pour it in an ingot, and hammer it back out or put it in my rolling mill and roll it into sheet.
Mm-hmm.
Wood, not so much.
Not so much, yeah. At some point it's okay. And do you do a lot of post-production on your photographs?
None.
That's part of a philosophy.
Right. A young friend of mine referred to me as an analog digital shooter, which I very much liked and appreciated him sharing that phrase with me, because now I use it all the time. I learned in the film days.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important to me to get it right in camera.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know that what differently much from what Myra does when she works. I want to capture what I'm seeing, and I don't. There's a little dishonesty to me in post-production and Photoshop. If you want to create electronic art, create electronic art, but don't call it photography, because it's not. It's an entirely different type of media to me. And I was listening to Myra just now saying how when she is working on a piece, it changes. I miss being in a dark room. I miss that bit of magic when the image appears on paper.
Yeah.
It's not as much fun when all you have to do is hit a button and send an image to the printer.
Sure.
It isn't the same. The finished product can still sing in the same manner.
Right.
But it's not that magic.
You can go back, you know.
I know, and I actually have. Like Myra, I followed Myra once again, and I took a number of photography classes at Heron, and it was a really wonderful experience to get back in the darkroom.
Mm-hmm. Why are you good studio mates for one another?
We both have an energy. Our energy is different, but we're both passionate about making art, passionate. And it's, I think that's one key. I don't know, I really didn't know Anne very well when she asked me to be a studio mate, but I wanted to be at the Stutz and looked around at the energy in the building. And as we got to know each other, our visions kept coinciding. And our backgrounds are similar. I'm from Vandenberg County. We grew up probably 40 miles from each other, but
we both played the flute in high school.
No, that's a strange coincidence,
isn't it?
And we both like the same pizza place in Evansville, Indiana.
We were both born in September. It's just the coincidence.
The stars align.
Yeah,
I think it's the professionalism, being professional at what we do. It's very important to me. It's very important to Anne, the way we project our studio, ourselves, and have fun and laugh.
That's in our MOU for sharing the space.
That's fantastic. That's brilliant.
Thank you.
That's brilliant. And so when the Stutz looked around and said, who would be good co-chairs for our holiday open house?
Well, actually,
these two get along so well. Is that how it worked? Or did one of you rope the other into it? I'm trying to figure out what these expressions mean.
Yeah, rope would be the correct verb. I just showed up at a meeting of the Stutz Artist Association one day and said, Myra and I are going to co-chair the holiday show this
Fabulous.
Year. Done.
Fabulous.
And I said, yes, you want me as your co-chair? Okay.
So I have the sense that, the glory at the Stutz is all about the spring, the April open house.
Right.
But I have to say, I really love the holiday event as well, because it's a time of year when people are certainly shopping for presents for themselves or for other people. Some years you encourage people with studios at the Stutz to have some things at a little bit lower price points to accommodate more casual shoppers. Is that something that's happening this year?
Always. I think you'll find a wide range, not only in April, but also certainly in the holiday show, because while people look for and appreciate unique creative items, we can't always afford that.
Right.
$1,200 or $2,500 piece of sculpture. And so small tabletop gifts.
That said, I imagine most artists would be open if somebody said, I'm going to bring somebody, I'm going to introduce you, I want to commission something for this special person in my life, even if the commission actually is realized in, say, March or later.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
That actually happens quite frequently at the Stutz.
Really?
What's
your favorite part of any of your open houses, the holiday one or the spring one? What do you like about it?
It's over. It's a lot of work. I say that as a joke. But especially in April, it's a lot of work getting ready, not only producing new work to have on the walls, but also cleaning out your studio so that when the people come, there is room for them to move around.
Sure. Kind of
access, ingress, mm-hmm. egress.
Mm-hmm. I think for me, it's just I grew up in a retail business, so that energy of an opening, I just get really excited. It mm-hmm. is a lot of work, and when it's over, you're almost numb.
Right. The string gets cut, and you go yeah. face down. In about 3 days, you can start to form words again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it's my first experience with the spring open house was last spring, and Ann said, just wait. There'll be so many people in here, you won't be able to move. And she was right.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And it was fabulous.
And to have people come in and stand in front of your work and say, wow,
yeah,
wow, it's an incredible feeling.
Uh-huh. Sharon Gamble with photographer Ann Emerson Wishard and sculptor Myra Perrin. They're co-chairs of the Stutz Holiday Open House coming up on Friday, December 4th. More than 50 artists will have works available to look at and to purchase, and there will be live holiday music, food trucks, beverage stations, and much, much more. Check it out at stutzartists.com. You can also see the work of Ann and Myra there. Again, stutzartists.com. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I'll take a look at a Century of Progress event at the Garfield Park Arts Center.
I'll chat with author James Alexander Tom about his new book.
And I'll find out how the Harrison Home is celebrating the holidays, and we'll have that arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.